Hello and welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com and brought to you by BlogTalkRadio.com, our new home. You can find us on BlogTalkRadio.com/Jedi and Germs, where you can find all of our episodes. Go in, download, stream, however you like to listen. Blog Talk Radio is your place. I'm your host, Alan Zog the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Yes, that's me. Hello.
Hello over there. How are you? Oh, so, I mean, we could jump right into it. You've got to...
I can hear you.
Oh, can you hear me? Oh,
that was weird. You know, I could not... Yeah, I can hear you fine now.
We were just across the river from each other. It just maybe the loud gushing water over rocks was drowning me out. I don't know.
That simply must be it. Although it sounded more like the emptiness of space.
All right, that's fine too. It's the vacuum of space. I'm out there. You're out there. We just can't talk. Okay, so this week, it always seems that things drop just perfectly right before an episode. And they did this week yet again. Last week, we had discussions of top 100 players. This week, Kevin Pelton drops the Jazz profile on us. You wanted to talk about that to kick the show off, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Go ahead and take us. Devin, you're chuckling.
Yeah, John, go ahead and talk about it. You know, do your thing, and then we'll do whatever else is on the agenda.
Okay.
This is awkward.
That George Hill will start, which I agree with, and then we'll go to our favorite four, you know, Hood, Hayward, Favors, and Gobert. I do think George Hill is going to start. There is some discussion that maybe they want to start Joe Johnson since he has started the last 11 years. I don't think they'll do that. I do still think Quinn will stick with Hill, Hood, Hayward, Favors, and Gobert. And this one, you know, the report agrees. This is Kevin Pelton's article with NBA Insider, if you have an Insider account. I know you don't, so I copied and pasted and emailed it to you so you could read it as well. But it goes through the starters. It goes through the reserves. It, you know, gives what he thinks everyone's strengths and weaknesses are. And he's really doing this for every team. There's not a lot of conclusions out of it. It's just kind of giving you an idea of the strengths and weaknesses of the players. And then if you go to what their projected wins, losses, the Jazz with their players project to be 47.6. So basically 48 wins. You know, which is about fine.
Well, you know, and yes, he does give more or less a profile, a breakdown there. He made some interesting points when regards to some of these players. I mean, I right off the bat talking about George Hill, and he makes no bones about it. He does say you're going to expect to see Dante Exum take over the starting spot as the season progresses. And I think that's what we're all expecting here in Salt Lake City, is that that's going to happen. But interesting that he talks a little bit about George Hill and the contribution that he's expected to make in Salt Lake City. And again, most of what he said is not anything new. It's not anything we haven't discussed already. Although there are a few things that he mentions that maybe are of worth noting. He points out that George Hill's role really doesn't change much in Salt Lake from what it was in Indiana. That, you know, George Hill shines more as a point guard who gets his teammates involved more than he is a spot-up shooter and scorer. However, he has adjusted his game to where he is that kind of a player now, a spot-up shooter, can drain the three, can drain shots when called upon. He doesn't have to be the one to always, you know, get other teammates involved and share the ball. But that's a bonus factor of his game. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that.
I'll just read the last little part here where he talks about his defense. Standing 6'3" with a 6'9" wingspan, Hill is big enough to defend either guard spot and hold his own in a switching defense. Well schooled in defensive technique, Hill works hard to avoid being screened on the ball. ESPN's Real Plus Minus rates Hill a top 15 point guard defensively, and a huge upgrade on the smaller players who manned the position for the Jazz in 2015-16.
Right. Which, again, most of that I don't think is anything different. It's interesting, though, to see, you know, I saw somebody on my timeline tonight talking about whether Teague is a better fit in Indiana than George Hill. And somebody agreed with him saying he is and felt like George Hill is on his way down. I'm thinking, is George Hill really on his way down? Because I don't think he is.
I don't think he is. And, you know, it's funny. I'm looking at the defensive ratings. And I don't see Teague in the top 40.
No. Well, and I think, as a matter of fact, last week we were talking, I don't even think Teague was in the top 30 players last week, was he? No, yes.
This has got to be wrong.
I'm trying to remember in SI's top 100 last week. Was Teague in the top 30 or no? I can't remember. I know I looked
I think he was
it.
40. You're talking about Sports Illustrated. I was just looking at the defensive real plus minus.
Right.
Where George Hill is 14th best defensive point guard. I am not seeing Teague. This has got to be a mistake.
Huh.
Do they have Teague as a shooting guard or something? Because he's not even here. So I don't know what's going on with this.
But I mean, even Sports Illustrated had George Hill, what, 50 or 40 places better than he was the year before. I think I just think, you know, the analysts will say George Hill is a much improved and a good fit for the Jazz, whereas I think there are others, and I've read some writers who don't think that George Hill is all that great anymore. And I don't know whether that's because he was not used right in Indiana, which I think is part of it. He wasn't used right in Indiana his last year.
Oh, there he is. Jeff Teague is 52. Wow.
Wow.
So George Hill, according to this, is a much better defender.
I would actually believe that, too. Huh. The eyeball test says that's true. Would you not agree?
Yeah. In fact, if you go by wins, George Hill is 13th and Jeff Teague is 23. So, I don't know. Hill seems to be the better player with these kind of stats. I know these stats aren't perfect.
Right.
And overall, you know, he's 13th and the best Jazz point guard was Shelvin Mack at 39.
Right. And by the way, just so everybody knows, George Hill's in a contract year, which means we're probably going to get some superb play from him this year. You'd have to think so.
Yeah.
So no, there's opportunity there. The couple other things I went going down the list. I mean, judging by what you said in the beginning is who he thought the starting five was. Joe Johnson was picked as the sixth man off the bench, I believe. And that may be the case for a while. I don't know how long that's going to last. The more I think about it, the more I feel like Joe Johnson's in a decline, and I don't know where he's going to be at I think he's going to be a great contributor, but, you know, Pelton talks about the fact that Quinn's going to have his hands full with minute distribution this year between Joe Johnson, Alec Burks, and Rodney Hood, and you know, your wing players. He's going to have to work on some minute distribution, and it's true, he will. Alec Burks is coming back. He was pretty tough on Burks, but with good reason. I mean, the guy hasn't played more than 26 games a year for the last 2 years, really. So with good reason, he was tough on him. I wonder if we're going to see Burks at a better level this year, and if we do, that could pose an interesting option for Quinn between Johnson and Burks. Does Burks end up being the odd man out? I don't know.
Well, you got to figure he's at best eighth, because Exum and Johnson are going to be ahead of him on the depth chart.
Right. For a while. And I don't think it will stay that way, but yes.
For a while. Well, it'll be up to him to move up. He'll have to prove it.
Agreed.
So, you know, I mean, he's 25 now. He's been in the league for a while. Health has really hindered him the past couple of years. And Locke was saying that for Alec's healthy seasons, he's been on losing teams. And how much of that is his teammates just weren't good enough. And now that Hayward's better, Favors is better, Gobert is better, he himself is hopefully better. And then he has these other teammates that are, you know, you got veteran leadership. You haven't promising young guys with Hood and Lyle. So the team's talent is there for him to blossom with. He has to show that he can blossom with all these other good players.
Right. What's more is he's going to have to learn to accept a role on defense a little bit more. He showed disengagement on defense in the past, and I'm not going to disagree with that. But on the offensive end, he's going to have to play a little more contained, probably for his health's sake more than anything. But in the end, he's also proven he can shoot the three. I mean, that's a guy you don't leave alone from downtown. He shoots 39%, although limited attempts, but he's still shooting 39%. So just overall, no, I don't think we garner anything new from Pelton. I do like... I do like the things he said. There's a lot of information to garner out of that, and you can make your own judgment on what that rotation is going to be. I think can you judge a rotation off of what Pelton says? I almost think you can. But he makes a lot of good cases for all of the players.
Well, I just feel bad that Chris Johnson is still considered part of the team. There is just no way that he's going to make this roster. So I don't know why they haven't freed him to go find another team.
Yeah, I don't know about that either.
I mean, he's non-guaranteed. Withy's non-guaranteed. Salary-wise, contract-wise, Withy and Chris Johnson are in the exact same status. But everybody knows that Withy's going to make the team and Johnson isn't.
And I don't
understand the limbo of NBA September sometimes.
I don't either. And part of the reason why Withy makes it and Johnson doesn't is Johnson is just so deep in that wing rotation. And there's a lot of wings to rotate through. Whereas Withy is not so deep in what is not as deep a front court as we have in wing rotation. And so Withy will probably see more time.
Here's Johnson's problem, and I'll quote K-Pel again. The biggest problem for Johnson is that more than half of his NBA shots have been three-pointers, and he hasn't made enough of them. A 33.8% shooter his first 2 years, Johnson has slipped below 30% since, and the Jazz's effort to rebuild his shooting form didn't take.
Yeah, that does answer it. And you know what's crazy? He was the better option between he and Millsap, too. So the Jazz kept him and let Millsap go, and he was the better option. But now he's in that position to start this season, just like Millsap was last year, the year before, whenever it was. And Johnson's in that position.
Elijah was just so bad on offense, they couldn't justify keeping him.
Exactly. And now we're to that same point with Chris Johnson.
I mean, his offense, it turns out, wasn't much better. And, you know, nice guy, happy for him that he was able to have the year that he did, but it's not enough to justify. You know, he's not going to make the team. I'm just confused why he's still lingering here.
Right. I don't know.
Maybe he'll stick around. Maybe he'll be part of the D League and go from there. Maybe that's what's going on.
All right. Does that cover our Pelton stuff? I mean, Devin, you get a chance to read it.
So.
Anything you want to add, Devin, on what you've read?
No, not really. I glanced over it. I didn't read the whole thing. I took an interest in him talking about Ball and Boy. Of course, he said that he expects that he'll spend the majority of his time with the Stars, but I'm curious how his minutes are going to come and go. There's so much that can change this season. There are so many. The veterans are guys who deserve minutes right now. I don't think there's any arguing that. But when you start thinking about Exum and Burks coming off season injuries, I mean, they have an opportunity to earn those minutes back. So the way that this is all going to play out at the end of the season it'll be fun to discuss, and maybe we can do that later.
Well, let's segue in to our next set of topics. We always like to, you know, the last few weeks we've liked to talk listener feedback, listener questions or topics. Let's go ahead and answer that question, because Justin Sweeney at Gets It on Twitter sent in a question for us. And I think it's a valid topic while we're talking about the Jazz profile. He wants to know. He wants us to pick our lineup in April. And I'm going to take a step further. I'm going to say April's down to the towards. There's like what, 5 games in April. Let's go March and April. Let's talk about that stretch run in the NBA season. Who is the go-to lineup for the Jazz over that stretch run?
Well, let's break this up.
Okay.
Let's say who is your starting lineup and who is your closing lineup.
Okay. John, start that off. Go with what Devin asked. I mean, who's in March and April, who is your starting lineup and who's your closing lineup, your closers in each of those games?
That's tough. I'm leaning more towards than not that the starting lineup is going to be the same all year. Hill, Hood, Hayward, Favors, and Gobert. But when it comes to closing games, as long as he hasn't diminished too much, I expect Johnson to be in there for a lot of, you know, last 5 minutes of the game situations. And if that's happening, then depending on what's going on in the game, I would expect either Favors or Gobert to be the one sitting out so that you have 4 guys who can score from the outside.
And Johnson's at your 4.
In those situations. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. There's a lot. Yeah, that's interesting to me. Okay.
But it's like, what if Trey Lyles just has this amazing progress in his second year? Maybe he's the
right
guy, you know?
Right.
What if Exum gets back to who he was defensively at the end of 2014?
Right.
15?
Right.
But his offense comes along nicely. You know, there's so many factors.
Or what if Alec Burks shows interest on defense, improves and shows that he's a big shot maker and shot taker and you want him in there to take big. Yeah, you're right. There is so, that's the thing about it come March or April. It's hard to predict right now because I almost feel like this is the way Quinn will be. Even in March and April, even if Johnson's healthy, even if Exum's better, I almost believe that the luxury that Quinn has of players that he can put in situational moments, I think that's mm-hmm. what it's going to be. If you're closing against Golden State and closing against the Spurs, I think the lineup might be different down the stretch in each of those games. Possibly. You know, and that's a luxury that Quinn has. If I had to pick my starting lineup down the stretch, see, I'm going to differ from you because I believe Exum's going to earn his spot back. And I think after All-Star break, your starters are going to be Exum, Hood, Hayward, Favors, and Gobert. And once again, you have so much flexibility to play around with lineups. But by the time March rolls around, I don't think Quinn's going to be playing with lineups anymore. I really think he's just going to put his best players on the floor for the situation as it demands.
Yep.
But I hope in Quinn's case, I really hope that it ends up being the one that dictates the matchups on the floor, not putting in matchups because they're being dictated to him by the other team. I want to be in a situation where the Jazz in the fourth quarter of a game are dictating the pace and the matchups, so the other team has to make adjustments to somehow stop the Jazz. We haven't had that in a while. We really have not had that luxury as a Jazz team to watch them being able to dictate pace and matchups in a game, especially in the fourth quarter. So this is a year where I think that is possible. And maybe he does do what you're saying. Maybe he puts Johnson in at the 4, Favors at the 5, Hayward at the 3. You know, you could go Hood or Burks at the 2. You could go Exum or Hill at the 1. And he'll dictate that based on what he wants to do and make the other team adjust to it. I hope so. And I think that'd be great. Devin, you're shaking your head. What do you think?
Well, it's not what I think. It's what's going to happen.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. What's going
to
happen?
The final starting lineup that you will see is going to be Gobert, Favors, Hayward, Hood, and your starting point guard will be Dante Exum. the reason is going to be that you have enough offensive firepower with Hood, Hayward, and Favors that you're really going to need, I think, George Hill scoring off the bench more than you're going to need him in the starting lineup.
I would agree.
In terms of closing, it's going to come down to the situation. If you're on the defensive side, of course, you're going to have Gobert in there. You're going to have your two towers. But let's just say that the Jazz are going into a situation where they need a shot. I think what you'll see is you will see Hill close the game because he has more shooting ability and he has that veteran presence. I think you will see Gordon Hayward at the two. I think you will see Joe Johnson at the three. I know he's considered a shooting guard, but really when you look at his build, and Pelton talked about this in his assessment, Johnson can guard a power forward.
Yeah, he can play the four.
I see him more as the three on the court. You're going to see Trey Lyles in there for that corner shot, because that corner three that he had was great. And the fact that he has the athleticism to make a move and get to the basket means that he really needs to be in there if the Jazz are needing a bucket late.
There's one thing that concerns me about Joe Johnson, and John, I don't know what you think about this, but reading Pelton a little bit further, this was a concern I had before I read what Pelton had to say, and I still have that now. I am concerned when he plays on defense against twos and threes, because he is degrading as a player. He's not what he used to be. And Pelton even pointed out the fact that if he goes up against quickness, he's going to get beat every time. If he goes up against guys who can take him side to side laterally, he's not going to keep up. And if the MO of the Jazz is truly defense, which it is, I'm not sure how long Quinn's going to want to keep him in the game at the expense of the defense. Am I right?
You know, I was just looking up Joe Johnson's stats, and I went to the real plus minus again and with win shares. And on small forwards, Gordon Hayward was fifth, and Joe Johnson was 14th. Not bad, you know?
No, not bad.
So if he hasn't diminished too much, I still see him as this valuable, you know, veteran. Like, you think of Paul Pierce and Andre Iguodala type, where they just know how to win games, even if their box score doesn't look like they're contributing as much. I see Joe Johnson as that kind of player on this team, and which is why I do see him closing more and more games. That would be my guess.
And that's exactly why I have him in there. You know, the thing to keep in mind is I think that you're going to see very good minutes balance from Coach Snyder when it comes to Johnson. I think he's going to get him his minutes and keep him happy. But I get the feeling he's going to be smart and he's going to get him rest when he can.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, your center to close out the game has to be Derek Favors.
It's sad that we're not even including Gobert in this situation of closing.
Well, it's going to depend. Like I said, if it's on the defensive side, you're going to put Gobert in. But as you saw last season, teams are still going to attack Gobert for his free throw shooting. It's just the way it's going to be. So I'm really hoping that if there's a part of his game that he's worked on, it's the free throw.
Yeah, I hope so.
But with this Jazz team, you have so many weapons on the outside, which is crazy because a few years ago we were saying the complete opposite. But I mean, if you say, okay, Joe can't go, he's you know, a liability or whatever, you can easily put Rodney in, move Gordon to the three, or, you know, keep him at the three, I should say.
So we just gave the long answer to Justin, but Justin, I hope that's
clear as mud
for you. I mean, I don't know. The real answer, short answer to all of it is I don't think we know. I don't know.
I know.
Yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. All right. So next question. Do you want to, what other questions did we get of value? I mean, I could throw
in. Oh, yeah. I've got a few here. Let me pull the list back up. Okay. What's the proper temperature to make fruit leather? That would be 140 degrees Fahrenheit. Why does NBA 2K17 Quinn Snyder look like Blue Moon 76? That is because the graphics are a little bit behind, but once you have higher bits in your NBA games, I expect by 2020, then it'll look photographic.
And that question, that question was from Clint. And by the way, Blue Moon 76 is my good friend Doug. And I don't know that I've seen a picture of NBA 2K17 Quinn Snyder, so I don't know that he looks like Doug, but okay, I'll take your word for it.
Are you excited for a defensive lineup of Exum, Hill, Hayward, Favors, and Gobert? Isn't that on paper one of the best in the league? Yes, I'm very excited for some of these defensive lineups. I'm excited to get the feeling back that we had in 2015 when we were just watching the best defense in the NBA come together at the end of that season. That was awesome.
Who asked that question?
That was Josh Beal.
Oh, okay. All right. Josh has some killer questions lately too. Thanks, Josh. We don't need to address all of Brian's questions. The fruit leather was enough.
How good are you guys at Top Golf? I have never been.
I haven't either. Saul, I sad to say, man, we have not been.
Have you guys ever been?
I've been.
Have you been to Top Golf? All right. Yes. Okay. Then treat Saul to your score. How good are you?
I don't know. I wasn't fantastic. Let me just say this. There's something about a driving range that scares me to death. I think it's the fact that there's always someone like right there. And I have a bad tendency with my clubs when I'm in a driving range setting. The tees always seem to be either too low or too high. They're never placed right where I like it. And my driver is a little bit undersized. And so I hit it off the top of the club when I'm playing off of those rubber tees. And so I'm always afraid I'm going to hit something and it's going to like kill the person next to me. So when I went to Top Golf, I just sat and played with the irons. The food was great.
I want to go to Top Golf.
Oh no, it's fun.
I want to check it out for sure. And so, Saul, you asked the question. I want to ask you in return, and you can get at us over Twitter about it. How do you? What's your score at Top Golf? I want to know if you've been and what your score is. Curious.
You have to specify too. Because there are so many different ways to play the game and so many different scorings.
Tell you what, I'll even go one step further. Saul, tell me your favorite part about Top Golf. That way, I mean, I've never been. Sell me on it. Tell me your favorite spot so that when I go, I know what I'm looking for.
The women.
Devin, what's your favorite spot?
Oh, crap. All right. Next question.
Okay.
And that's it for listener questions.
Dun, 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 wait a minute. Dun. Is it? Yes, it is. Okay, we can move on. Yeah,
there was one more.
No. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
Why can't Allen defend the big shot? That was another one.
And
I don't know. I've never made Jazz Twitter pickup ball, so I couldn't tell you.
I'll answer this one.
Come on.
See, this comes from our good friend Sean. And what happened is we were playing pickup a couple weeks ago. And
Sean hit the game-winning shot in two different games with my hand in his face.
Yeah, in your eye.
With my hand in his face.
In the face. The reason Allen can't defend the big shot is Allen is more of a center power forward. He's not really a perimeter guy. Part of that, I'm sorry, Allen. It's just age. You know, he's lost a step.
Hey, and I'm just going to say this, Devin, you and Sean, the answer to that question, Sean, is how come you and Devin can't guard the crafty guy in the paint? Neither one of you can.
Because no one calls a charging foul a pickup. Anyway,
Oh my goodness. All right, that's the end of our questions tonight. All right, next up, we're going to talk about our other sports topics. All right, let's talk about college football.
Yes, Utah destroyed San Jose State. BYU lost by 3 points to UCLA. BYU went another game without getting at least 20 points. There was much weeping, wailing, gnashing of teeth, rending of garments. Taysom Hill just hasn't looked like the player he used to be. I saw that Kalani Sitake said that he is still going to keep the starting job because when they looked at film, They didn't think it was his fault what was going on with the offense, which means, you know, what I saw from the UCLA game. And I'll also say this, I did not notice officiating at all in that game. I just noticed a really bad offense.
Yes. I didn't see problems with the offensive line.
Couldn't protect Taysom, and he couldn't outrun guys who made it through the line.
And receivers' timing was off and weren't catching balls that were thrown to them.
Okay.
There was at least three drop passes, and there were also some really bad throws.
Hold up, Devin. We'll get to Utah and SJSU in a minute. You hold up.
You have to hit your receiver, man.
He did. You didn't watch that game. You watched San Jose, didn't you?
There were three drop passes.
Yeah, and there were
also ones where he threw at his feet and threw way out of bounds.
No, I agree. But there
were some wild. The fact is,
it's not all Taysom's fault. So I'm going to go with you on this, John, too. And I was saying this during the game. I was watching this game as well, and I said this during the game. To put this squarely on Taysom's shoulder is completely unfair, because it's not. The offensive line was atrocious in the game. They did not. They missed blocked assignments. They missed a lot of assignments, really, and let guys through. My whole question. See, a question was posed to me about that. Is that a problem with Taysom's play calling? Is that a problem with Ty's play calling? Or is that a personnel problem? I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's a personnel problem right now. We're seeing a coaching staff get underway, but also you have to realize for what they want to do, run a pro style, you're going to need different personnel at the positions on offensive line. That's going to take recruiting. That's going to take longer to get there. It's not just going to happen overnight in the first three games. Sorry, but it's not. So the issue, I don't think, is entirely Taysom at all. Is Taysom partly default? Absolutely. But I think there's issues on the offensive line. Missed assignments. I think there's issues in timing with routes and with receivers getting to their spots. It's an entire problem. And I think it goes back to, this is a new coaching staff, and it's going to take a while for everybody to get on the same page. I'm sorry, but it is. Facts are facts.
Nope.
And see, there's still part of that in me that wonders, would this team be having the same lack of success if it was Tanner Mangum? Because Tanner Mangum, you knew, could at least pass the deep ball.
Right.
And three games now, I don't have faith in Taysom Hill's ability to pass the deep ball.
Sorry, 4 years in, I don't have faith in his ability to pass the deep ball. And I agree.
Yeah.
But the problem is that watching against UCLA, if you put Tanner in instead of Taysom, Tanner doesn't have time to throw the deep ball either. I mean, Taysom was under pressure a lot in that game. And I think you even go back to the Utah game, and we were talking the Utah line, you know, a couple weeks ago, and how elite they are. Taysom's been under pressure in those two games. If Tanner was in that situation, would he throw the deep ball? I'm sure he would if he could, but you're still got guys on the offensive line that are missing assignments.
Look, you can only Hail Mary so many games.
Well, they said that UCLA's game plan was to contain the run. I mean, they right. knew that Hill wasn't that great a passer, and so their main focus was on stopping the run, not only Jamal Williams, but any Taysom Hill scrambling.
And they did.
So they blitzed a lot. They had a lot of pressure on the inside, and it was a smart game plan.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it worked. Because, yes, the weakness of BYU right now is their passing game, and therefore, if you focus on what they're strongest at, you're going to beat them. And they did.
I agree. So, I mean, again, my answer is all of the above when it comes to problems with the BYU offense. There are some issues that need to be addressed, and I don't think they're going to be addressed until late in the season, and we may not even see them addressed till future. I mean, we knew coming into this season that the Cougars were going up against their toughest strengths of schedule they've had in a while. That's no surprise. But they're doing it with a rookie coaching staff. And that's no surprise either. So, Devin, go ahead. You've been holding back.
No, it's very simple. And there's one thing that they need to do, and I think everyone in the state of Utah is familiar with it.
Oh, geez, what is it?
Hashtag fire tie.
Oh, all right. That's enough.
Isn't
of that.
That what we do here?
I know, right? No, and I think Ty's
a
great.
That's how we do.
It is, and I think Ty's a great answer at offensive coordinator for them. I also like the pro style versus the spread offense. I've never been a fan of the spread in the college game. Never have been. So I like the idea of having a pro style, and I think they can do it, but they need personnel to do it. And that's players on the field, and I don't think they're there yet. Now, to Utah. Utah, San Jose. They blew them out, but Devin, as a Utah fan, there are still concerns on offense there, too.
Yeah, I'm not feeling good.
No.
The defense was slow to wake up. The offense had some struggles. I did see a lot that I liked, though. You know, the running game seems to be coming together.
Who was the feature back for most of the game? Or did they do it by committee again?
I believe it was a pretty balanced attack that they had. Is it Moss?
Moss and McCormick, right?
Yeah, both of them, you know, took some snaps, but I'm really impressed with Moss. I think he's going to end up being a fantastic back for Utah. And I believe, and I apologize to our listeners because I'm not familiar with all the names. Is it Thompson? That was the receiver. Had a good game from what I saw.
I don't remember for sure. You're not talking about our Thompson. It might. I don't know.
I can't remember the
name. How was Patrick? Patrick had a good game, didn't he? Again, isn't it? Am I thinking of it? Is it?
Where is the intern? Why do we not have like a roster in front of us right now?
That's a good point. I don't know. I didn't watch the game.
I didn't either. So
I have other things.
I do know that the Utes got out the gate real slow in that game. So, and it took them until the second half. But I mean, Devin, Troy Williams, you like what he brings in the future?
Yeah, I feel good. I feel like Utah's offense has what they didn't have for the past several seasons. And that's the opportunity for an explosive play.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, you had a couple guys who could get you
Devontae Booker.
Right, but I'm talking especially in the passing game.
Right.
And I feel like you kind of have that dual threat quarterback more. I was never real confident in Travis Wilson's arm.
Right.
You know,
Troy Williams got a nice arm though.
So I feel good in some ways, but they've got USC coming in this week. It's the blackout game. USC is a dumpster fire again, but to me, that's a trap game.
And I would never overlook them as a dumpster fire ever, because when it comes to Pac-12 play.
All right. I pulled up a box score so we can talk about this a little more intelligently.
Who's the receiver?
Troy Williams' quarterback rating was a 51.9.
It's not great.
Rushing, you had Moss and Shine both had 12 carries.
So it was Shine.
Oh, so Shine, okay.
They both were averaging, Moss was 7.9, Shine was 7.7. McCormick had 7 carries. He averaged 8.7. Receiving, the one that caught the most was Tim Patrick.
Not surprising there.
He was 6 for 121. Butler Bird was 5 for 56. Moy was 3 for 19. McCormick was 3 for 18. And then you also had catches from Singleton, Wilson, Fultz, and Simpkins.
So it was Tim Patrick that I was thinking
and
of.
And that's who I thought you were talking about.
He had a very solid game.
So, yeah.
So I think you'll see him be the go-to guy, and I think you'll see Butler Bird as that guy who maybe doesn't get as many touches, but can really create once he has the ball if you can get him in space.
All right, so let's make predictions really quickly. Who wins the game? Utah, USC, who wins that game? That's a tough one for you to pick, I know, but pick it.
You know, everything should say...
It's at Utah. I'm going to pick Utah.
Yeah, everything should say Utah. Everything. USC has struggled mightily. Granted, they played Alabama
and Stanford.
But Utah has won 3 games, but they haven't played particularly well. I'm going to give Utah the edge, but I do not see them winning by more than a single score. I'm thinking they win by, like, 2 or 3 points.
Okay.
And I'm not expecting a shootout here. I'm thinking it's kind of like what we saw with BYU. You know, I think the offense gets it going a little more. I don't think they have 6 turnovers, But the defense is really going to be what has to win it for Utah.
By the way, Vegas agrees with you, Utah by three. So there you go. John, you pick Utah. All right, BYU at yep. West Virginia.
At West Virginia. What conference is West Virginia in?
Big 12.
The Big 12? Boy, they're really going to want that one. West Virginia, they're 2-0.
And they're West Virginia's favored by 7, mind you.
Yeah, I don't really see them. I think West Virginia will win. I think BYU's going to be big underdogs going into that game. They have yet to really let me know that they know what they're doing on offense. So,
Devin,
yeah, they might start 1-3 this year.
This is going to sound weird. Part of me wants to say BYU will win this game, but I just can't. It's on the road. I don't feel like they put it together. And truthfully, I have a buddy who's a West Virginia grad. And so I feel like one of those rare moments where I just have to be like, okay, yeah, I'm going to cheer for your team. So I'm going to say they're going to win and I'm going to cheer for them to win because, well, I'm a good friend.
Oh, all right. I'll pick them. I haven't picked mine yet. I want to say Utah wins at home, but it's USC and I don't know yet. So I'm going to pick USC and I'm going to pick them by 3. And then I am for once going to pick BYU to win on the road. I think they might right the ship this week. And I'm going to pick that Tanner Mangum plays the second half. So there you go.
So how do they win? Is it a Hail Mary?
Yes. Hail Mary.
Is that why?
Hail Mary. Tanner Mangum comes in, puts together a game-winning 95-yard drive, 90-yard drive, whatever it is, and hits a big pass at the end of the game to win it.
Tanner Mangum, save us all.
I don't know. Just part of me thinks that maybe this is where they right the ship. But, you know, again, a long season ahead of them. All right, let's jump next to NFL. Any standouts from this week?
Seahawks lost to the Rams in a very that was an ugly game.
Yeah,
embarrassing.
Yeah, was it 9-6? Was the final?
I think it was 9-3.
Ooh, yeah,
just really, really bad.
and that's the same team that the Niners had beat the week before, 28-0. So, not that you can take much from that game, but wow.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, the Packers lost to the Vikings, which I didn't expect that.
Didn't Bradford go out in that game?
No, I don't believe so. In fact,
AP went out.
Did he stay in?
AP did go out, but Bradford had
AP went out.
Bradford had himself
Bradford
a game.
Stayed in. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Vikings are 2-0. They lost Bridgewater before the season even started, and then AP went out. So it was his knee. I remember he was carried out, so I don't know how long he's going to be out. But,
I believe it was like a torn meniscus, and he was projected at, was it 3 to 6 weeks or something like that, or 2 to 4 weeks in Adrian Peterson time. He'll probably play this week because it's Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
The Eagles are 2-0.
Yes. Okay. So that's
Broncos are 2-0.
And the Broncos, didn't they have to put together a game winning?
Texans are 2-0.
Yeah. Didn't the Broncos have to had to put together something in the end to win that game? I forgot. I watched that game and I'm trying to remember how it ended. It was a close game down the stretch, wasn't it, Devin?
I don't know.
You didn't watch?
No,
they won pretty easily. They won 34-20.
That's right. It was close.
Colts haven't been looking that good.
No, they haven't. Okay, but my standout game of the week is the Eagles. I did watch that game. And, dude, behind the arm of a rookie quarterback, they're 2-0. And he looks really good for a
rookie quarterback, and their defense looks great.
Yeah, they
maybe
do.
Maybe that's because they're playing the Bears, but they look great.
Well, and the Bears had how many injuries in this game where they lost key players on offense? Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah, and Cutler threw two interceptions
before he went out with an injury too. So, but no, what impresses?
Oh, he only had one interception, but yeah, he was. Then he went out, and then Hoyer came in, but it was It was already a lost cause.
But what impresses me most is the way that Wentz, who's the rookie quarterback for Philly, has been playing through two games. An interesting point in the second half. They went for it on fourth down when they could have kicked a field goal. They also went for two after a score instead of kicking the extra point. And for those who didn't catch it, the reason why I think has part to do with their kicker. They had a kicker kick two extra points. He missed one early, and then the second one I think went in, and then the third one bounced off the uprights and went in. Guy was going wide left quite a bit, so I don't know how much that went into play, but ultimately they went on the shoulders of Wentz down the stretch to get those points. So,
which is funny because he made all three of his field goals, but yeah. He missed an extra point, and because they moved the extra point back, it has become more suspenseful that guys are actually, we're having more and more extra points getting missed.
Well, and like I said, the two extra points he did make late in the game, one of them barely missed the upright, but made it through. But then the second one doinked off the left upright before going in. It's like he went left on both of them. He dragged it left. But again, I can't say enough about the rookie Wentz. Wentz looked very impressive in this game. Philly, I think, have got themselves quite a bright future with that quarterback going forward. So that's my standout for week two for me for the NFL. So
let's go to Devin's quick hits.
All right, let's jump right into quick hits.
All right. Well, you're talking about the Philadelphia Eagles. Did either of you see the long snapper for their team that was on America's Got Talent?
No.
He was a magician and he was fantastic. He did not win it. Sorry, spoiler alert. I know I'm late telling you, but he's actually, he seems like a really cool guy. I would encourage everyone to, if you like magic tricks and if you like football, jump on YouTube and check out some of the highlights. Patriots lost their backup quarterback. So now they are down to third string. Is that going to be a big deal for them this coming week?
No. John?
It is.
Huh?
Who is it? Do you remember his name?
The third string.
Doesn't really matter.
He's the third string quarterback.
Yeah, but you don't even know the second string quarterback's name.
Jimmy. What's his name? Jimmy G.
Oh, Jimmy Garoppolo or whatever it was.
Yeah. So he went down.
He'll be fine.
So he's day to day, I think, is what's going on.
So now they're to the third string.
Jacoby Brissett.
Nice.
Brissett.
And the name's
that is the man who will be quarterbacking for the Patriots.
The names keep getting tougher.
Well, it's against the Texans. Texans are 2-0. But I don't know if it's because Texans have started with an easy schedule.
The Pats are 2-0 too, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But I have more belief in the Pats 2-0 than I do the Texans 2-0.
Right. And the Pats only have to go two more weeks, this week and next, before they get Brady back anyway.
Is it at the Texans? No, it's a home game.
They'll win.
And their next one's a home game against the Bills. They might be 4-0 when they get Brady back.
Yeah, that's just the way the NFL works, isn't it?
F you, Roger Goodell.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't get Devin all charged up, because as a Denver fan, he has a built-in hatred for the Patriots and Brady.
I don't know. Did you guys see that that Jerry Jones wants Tony Romo right back into the starting lineup as soon as possible? Good move, bad move?
Good move.
Yeah, good move. But Jerry Jones always wants something messed up.
Bad move. Get him out of there. Make him retire. Kick him to another team. I don't care what you do.
Well, I say good move because Jerry Jones always wants to mess with the lineups of the teams himself, and it always means good news for the rest of us that are not fans of the Cowboys.
A lot of talk about Cutler with the Bears. I believe he suffered an injury in the game. Should that be their number one priority, is to cut ties with Cutler as soon as possible and get a new quarterback?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't like Cutler.
Something tells me that's a conversation we could have had years ago, and we would have had the same answer.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see here. There was also a protest by the Philadelphia Eagles pregame. Instead of taking a knee, it was with a raised fist is what I saw. It, as effective, better policy thoughts? I mean, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. This is a quick hit.
Well, I don't... Let's for me, it came into more focus with the shooting of Terrence Crutcher. I hope I'm saying that right.
That
I don't
was
know if you get it,
yesterday or the day before, was, right?
Yeah, where he had his hands raised. He was walking his way back to his car. Apparently, the entire issue was that his car had died and it was in the middle of the road. I haven't heard anything as to why their guns were drawn on him, on why the officer shot him. But you had helicopter circling, and the guy in the helicopter said he looks like a bad dude too. And it's just like, why are their guns drawn in the first place? I'm looking forward to any possible justification there is.
And here's the thing with that, John, because the victim was actually tased and shot. So someone had a taser out already. The female officer who happened to fire the bullet, her husband, an officer, was in the helicopter. He was not the one, from what I heard, who made the...
Yeah, he wasn't the guy who was speaking. But
that just seems like it is going to be a messy situation.
Agreed. And I saw a picture of it today on Eric Reed from the 49ers timeline, because he tweeted out an interesting meme that had... had a question about how everybody has a problem with Kaepernick on a knee, but yet they don't have a problem with what went down in this situation. I don't know all of the facts about this, but judging from the picture, this situation did not look good. And I hope that justice is brought to the situation. Absolutely.
And I could be incorrect, but from what I saw, there was another shooting that took place. I believe it was South Carolina just today, where it was a similar situation. I believe the man was waiting for his kids to get off the bus and was reading a book, and he was shot. So
I don't know. I haven't kept up on it, but this is not getting good. It's not going to get better either.
That's one, because it was a black officer who had shot him. It's going to bring up some different discussion, but something tells me that come this next Sunday, or even, I don't know who's playing the Thursday night game, you're going to see, I'm expecting more protests or something here. It just, I didn't think it would gain steam like this. I really didn't. But, you know, we'll see. On a more positive note, saw something today, Kaepernick with the $1 million he was donating, going to be in increments of $100,000 each month, to various communities throughout the United States, and we'll be setting up a website so that people can see exactly what the money is going to. I thought that was kind of cool. Moving from football to baseball, Tim Tebow getting some time with the Mets. I really don't want you to comment. I just want to look at Alan and say, ha ha, I was right.
Fine, you were. All right.
And I have to ask, did you guys watch Louisville play Florida State?
No, but I saw plenty of highlights of Lamar Jackson.
Was I right or was I right? John, did you see it at all? Even like the highlights?
I too saw the highlights, yeah.
Hey, John, he wants us to say he's right, so we'll just say he's right.
That kid is
legit. I think he's right.
That run, he had like that 40-yard run where just – insane
but burst. He passes the ball well too.
Yeah,
he's got an arm on him.
Yeah, I mean that's going to be something fun to watch, and I just love the fact that college polls. Let me ask you guys this is just me wanting to know if you agree with me. I do not think that you should have college football polls until after week 4, because early just seems to set up this bias of, well, we said they were number one, we can't take them down a notch.
I agree.
Is there any reason
ideally, yes. I would think realistically, can't we at least make them wait until after week two?
Yes.
I mean, reporters got to write about something.
Right.
But Florida State should not be in the top 20.
Or my thought process is have at least a preseason poll, but have it have no merits once the season starts. There's you say, these are the guys we picked as our preseason, but they in no way reflect after week one what the teams are ranked.
Well, they would probably argue that's what's happening, but it really isn't.
All right. Two more quick hits.
Okay.
Floyd Mayweather fighting Conor McGregor, boxer versus MMA fighter. Looks like it is not going to happen, so let's play hypothetical in an all-out MMA match. Who wins, Floyd?
Conor.
Okay.
Conor McGregor easily and handily because Floyd has nowhere to run.
Sadly, I have no comment on this because I don't watch either, so it doesn't matter.
I think he would absolutely destroy Mayweather. Just, I mean, if you force them to keep a boxing match, you know, of course I'm going to go with Mayweather. But anything that goes to the ground, it's over right then and there.
Okay. Yep. Final quick hit.
Final quick hit. Let's end with a feel-good story. Let me find this real quickly so I can give you the specifics. I believe it was the World Triathlon Series final. A brother goes down struggling with heat exhaustion. And who comes to his rescue? His brother. Slows up, helps him across, lets him finish second place, so he takes second overall. Did you guys see it?
I didn't.
It is a great story. There is, I believe, the video posted as well. If you go to ESPN on their Facebook page, it was posted September 19th at 8 p.m. So if you need something to make you smile, I would go check that out.
All right.
Okay.
There we go. All right. Before we finish off with our final segment of pop culture, I want to remind everybody, if you don't get a chance to, head on over to fanessentials.net where you can find NBA swag, NBA, you know, box of NBA swag and fun, you know, items. You can go in, pick your favorite team, order. If you use Jedi and Germs at checkout, you'll get 30% off the first month. Go and check out fanessentials.net. All right.
Jedi and or Jedi ampersand?
Jedi and Germs, it's fine.
Okay, I want to make sure they use the right coupon code.
Yeah, no matter whether they type in Jedi ampersand or Jedi and Germs, it's all going to go through. So anyway, all right, let's finish off pop culture. You just wrote Emmys. I think that probably says it enough. John, what were your thoughts on the Emmys?
As a show, I enjoyed it. I thought Jimmy Kimmel was a good host. There were some surprises, some expecteds. I was thrilled that Ben Mendelsohn won for season one of Bloodline. That was just some of the best acting I saw all of last year. The top spots went about how you thought. Best comedy was Veep. Best drama was Game of Thrones. Best limited series was The People versus OJ Simpson, although Fargo season two equally deserved it. The surprise was Rami Malek as best actor in Mr. Robot. I've started watching Mr. Robot. I'm still on season one, and I do really enjoy him, but I'm surprised Emmy recognized him for that. So good for them.
Where can we find Mr. Robot? What channel is that?
It's ARC.
On where?
USA.
USA Network?
USA Network.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
Season one, I think I'm watching it on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Is that the hacker one?
Yeah.
Okay, I actually heard about that earlier this week from a coworker. It's
a good show. It is very good, and Christian Slater is finally back. He plays Mr. Robot. It's a good show. Let's see, what else? Jeffrey Tambor won for Transparent.
Didn't a Downton Abbey gal win something too?
Yep, Maggie Smith won for Downton Abbey. She has never attended the Emmys. And Jimmy Kimmel, it was funny because in his opening monologue, he said, all right, this year we're doing it different. If you're not here for the trophy, you don't get it. We're giving it to the runner-up, which I honestly wish they really would do that. But then she won. And so Jimmy Kimmel came out and said, no, we're not mailing this to her. If she wants it, it's in the lost and found.
Yes, I saw that. You know, he jumped in quite a few times when people were ready to accept or when they weren't there to accept. It was always great. Jimmy Kimmel was great. Really was.
Yeah. At one point he's like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Bill Cosby. And then there's just like 10 seconds of silent awkwardness as you're getting reactions. And then Jimmy Kimmel comes out. I was like, he's not really here. I just wanted to see what you guys would do.
Were there any surprises to you of shows that were left off the nomination list?
Oh, good question. Left off. Well, for me, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is still one of the funniest shows on TV, and I'm kind of bummed that it's no longer being considered among the comedy categories. I also couldn't help but notice that Orange is the New Black has lost a lot of steam, which, you know, goes along with my viewing because I gave up on it in season three, and I'm gathering, well, I've seen the ratings. It's still the number one show on Netflix, but I don't know. It's steam quality. I'm trying to think if there's anything out there. I mean, most of the really quality shows that I watch and enjoy were nominated. I was thrilled The Americans was nominated. It only won one, but I'm glad it at least made it up there.
So, interestingly enough, I went out to do some research on this because I was curious, and I'm going to put on my future goggles here for a minute. Next year's Emmys, I think it's going to feature Stranger Things. I would find it very difficult to believe that at least one vote, one nomination does not come out for Stranger Things in one capacity or another, whether it's Winona Ryder or one of the kids or something. But I had to go out and do my homework to see why it wasn't this year. Well, it's because the nominations came out a day before it was released on Netflix.
Yeah.
So if you put on your future goggles, do you believe that that Stranger Things maybe ends up on the nomination list next year?
I think so. I think Stranger Things will be there. I also think that this new show from HBO, Westworld, is getting a ton of buzz. I bet you it's there in some capacity. And also, my understanding is season 7 of Game of Thrones isn't coming out until the summer and therefore probably will not be eligible for next year's Emmys. So there'll be room for another show to step up and take the win.
Are you surprised that Daredevil has not made the list in any category over the last couple of years?
No, it's genre and it's good, but no, I'm not surprised. I mean, no superhero show is getting nominations, and you know, I don't watch Arrow or any of those, but I understand that that's a pretty good show. Daredevil's probably my favorite of the superhero shows I'm watching. I liked it a little more than Jessica Jones, and I thought season 2 was really good. Looking forward to season 3. Looking forward to Iron Fist, looking forward to Luke Cage.
Absolutely.
If one of those shows has a different enough flavor to it and really stands out, then maybe it can make that jump.
My money's riding on Luke Cage being that potential.
Yeah, me too. I'm leaning toward that as well. So I have high hopes for that one, but those are the ones that I'm looking at.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was interested to hear your comments on the Emmys. I mean, I watched most of them with my wife, but I knew we would end up talking about them tonight. I was sitting there Sunday night looking at them. I'm like, you know what? This is going to be on topic list. We're going to talk about this Tuesday night. Oh, I got to put together thoughts here.
The other one I think is going to jump up in there next year is Narcos. Narcos didn't get anything, but I think it will.
Is that another Netflix show or
next year?
It is.
Yeah, season 2 just came out. It's a really good show. It's all about the drug trade and Pablo Escobar. Season 3, I understand, is going to pursue a different drug kingpin. That'll be interesting to see how they do that, if they get a completely new cast or if they just fictionalize it up a little more and follow the two DEA guys as they chase someone else that we've heard of. I don't know.
There's another show on Netflix I've been meaning to ask you about, and now I can't remember. I'm trying to look it up right now, that I have added to my list, but I have not watched yet. Narcos was one, but it wasn't Narcos. It was a, maybe it was Narcos. Which one's the one that's set in classic New York style, New York City? Oh gosh. It was a rapper.
Narcos
rapper
is in Colombia.
Well, it was a rapper and a singer.
Oh, The Get Down?
No. Yes. Yes. The Get Down. Have you watched that?
I haven't watched that yet. I have that, you know, in my queue.
So do I.
While I'm finishing up some other things, but yeah, I've heard good things about that. Oh, another one I've heard about that'll probably get nominated is Atlanta. It's on FX. It stars Donald Glover from Community.
Okay.
That's getting a lot of good reviews too.
All right. Well, that's the Emmys for you. And that's I'm looking forward to that. Quick thoughts. Fall season lineup for TV is started this week. Lots of shows to look forward to. Devin, we're looking forward to the next season of Blacklist.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the Chicago series.
Yes, all of the Chicago series.
I'll be happy when Grimm comes back. But there is a new one on NBC that I'm very excited about.
Which one?
It's called This Is Us.
Oh, yes.
And I'm going into it not knowing much, but everything that I'm seeing is making some connection, drawing parallels at least, with Parenthood. And those of you who know that Parenthood could very well be my favorite TV series of all time.
You laughed and you cried with that series.
That
yes.
was a great
yes,
series. And so I'm really excited to watch that. I mean, that just aired tonight. And so that will be on my agenda for tomorrow.
There you go.
We'll be watching that. So everyone who's listening in the morning, go home and watch that in the evening, and we can tweet about it.
Nice, nice. Okay.
On a related note, I have to tell you something.
What's that?
I finished How I Met Your Mother. 208 episodes of How I Met Your Mother. And everyone said, don't watch the ending. I watched the ending.
Are you a better man for it now?
I loved the ending. It was ugly and messy, and it was not what you wanted, but that's the way life goes sometimes. And I could have a discussion for hours about that show. But yeah, just want to throw that out there. I get to watch new things on Netflix, so Narcos may be one of those things jumping up the list.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Couple others. I was looking at it for new series. Designated Survivor with Kiefer Sutherland.
Yes.
He plays a cabinet member who stays away from the State of Union address. State of the Union address is nuked, and so he is suddenly the President of the United States.
Yep.
Very curious about that. That debuts Wednesday, so most people listening to this, that will be tonight.
Can I make a quick comment on that? One thing that concerns me is a little bit is what we've seen Kiefer Sutherland in to this point, and I'm afraid of confusion from one series to the next. Is there any potential for that?
For what?
For confusion between 24 and this series.
I think his name's Jack in the series, isn't it? I'm just kidding. I'm totally
no. I'm just saying.
I know. It's like, come on. We all know you're Jack. No, his name is Tom Kirkman.
Okay.
And there is also going to be a 24 Legacy series coming out mid-season. It is not with Jack Bauer. It's going to be a new guy. Let's see.
It's just,
Corey Hawkins is the guy's name.
It's just
Corey
my Hawkins. Question. My question is how many times can Kiefer Sutherland play something to do with a president or something surrounding a president in a series without you getting confused between series? You know what I mean?
As many as it takes.
Okay. I'm just asking.
How many?
Isn't that what's happening with that new Kevin James series? Isn't he just married to someone else? He's still the King of Queens.
All right. This is true. I won't disagree with that.
It is him. Okay. Did you guys see Straight Outta Compton?
No.
Did you see Straight Outta Compton?
No, neither of us
did. The guy that played Dr. Dre in that movie, he is the new star of the new 24 series.
Okay.
And Jimmy Smits is in it as well.
Ooh, interesting.
Oh, wait a minute. Doesn't that guy's also in The Walking Dead? Well, I guess Heath probably isn't long for this world. He's in a new series.
All right. You said other series coming up. I took you off the sidetrack there a little bit.
There's a Wizard of Oz series that's coming mid season. They call it a dark, edgy reimagining, but Vincent D'Onofrio is going to play the wizard.
Oh my word.
So, okay. Curious about that. There's an Exorcist TV series starring Gina Davis.
Oh, Lethal Weapon TV series.
Lethal Weapon TV series, which I actually honestly am kind of curious about.
So am I.
There's a new MacGyver.
Yes. It must be the season of remakes, seriously, or the season of continuation. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, Marlon Wayans is getting his own series. So you got two Wayans brothers getting their own series this fall.
There you go. All right. Well, that's your pop culture. That's things to look for.
And Prison Break's coming back.
Oh, yes. There you go. I knew you had something else to throw in there. All right.
And yeah.
Let's go ahead and wrap this up then. Another great, that's a good place to finish, I think. This week's episode of Jedi and Germs. So thank you all for listening. Not that I have to remind anybody, but you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs. You can find us on blogtalkradio.com/Jedi and Germs, Facebook Jedi and Germs. There is the pesky intern that runs the Jedi and Germs account on Twitter. Don't mind him. He really is sometimes mindless. And a mindless philosopher of all things. And hit us up anytime. We actually enjoy having some listener feedback and topics to discuss each week too. So if you want to discuss something, feel free to please tweet at us, message us, and we'll talk about it on the show. We appreciate all the support that we get from all of you and look forward to many more to come. Thank you for joining us. Have a good night. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.